I think as a streamer in general, whether you're male or female or just online, is like, if you choose to be a streamer, then you're choosing to get hate. That's how people see it. So it's like, but you know, if you don't want hate, you shouldn't be a streamer. It's basically part of our job description, and that is one of those things I try to work against.
In this episode, John sits down with Emma B, aka Sweebless. She's a content creator who bridges the gap between technology, gaming, and lifestyle. And she's passionate about entrepreneurship, innovation, and communication. Let's jump into the interview.
Emma, welcome to Building the Metaverse. It is awesome to have you here. I think today we are going to have a great discussion that is going to help inform and educate people about a whole dimension of the game industry and the metaverse that is really an untold story for most people, which is the job of being a live streamer and playing games and bringing experiences live to people who are out there on the internet trying to connect with people, trying to learn about games. It's the original play to earn, I think, and we'll return to play to earn later, but let's just start there. I would love you to just share a little of the story of your journey, first of all. Like, how did you become a streamer? How did you get into it? And is this like, if I wanted to just start live streaming, could I go into business doing that like tomorrow if I wanted to do that? Like, I'm curious Absolutely. About all that. Like, so tell us the journey.
Every journey is different, but yeah, my journey was a bit strange, because the first time I saw Twitch, that was like 9 years ago now, and I didn't at all understand. I mean, I hadn't even seen YouTube or let's play on YouTube, only like cat videos and, you know, the things that you see going around Facebook. When I saw Twitch the first time, it was actually a developer who showed me Twitch, and that was the developer of Minecraft, Notch. And I asked what he was doing, and he said he was watching a speedrun. And I'm like, what is a speedrun? And he showed me a link to Twitch, where I saw this guy sitting being like, playing games. And I mean, my first reaction was like, what, you're playing the game, but you're not actually, are you playing with him? You're just, nope. Are you going to play with him? You're waiting to play? No. He was just watching. And I thought it was kind of weird in the beginning, but then I watched, which is funny, like, yeah, but I was, I did not, like, I'm like, that's so strange, but then I got totally just engulfed in Twitch and started watching it, and I got it. I mean, it's kind of like watching, you can compare it to watching any sports, right, like football or whatever, only it's digital, right? So I think I started doing that, and then 6 months later, I finally took the jump and started playing. And the reason why I did it was not to become like a famous streamer or making money out of streaming. Actually, I didn't even know you could do that at the time. I just wanted to play with people, pretty much. Anyone except my dad, because nothing wrong with my dad, but he was the only person I knew that played games. And I got to play with him, but not my colleagues that didn't like games. So I was like, wow, amazing, this big community for like gamers that like the same thing I do, and you know, like just being able to play multiplayer games with people, not just running around in a big world. That was the main reason actually that got me started, just the games and the community, probably the big
How long did it take you before it went from, you know, the beginning to like you could really earn the equivalent of a reasonable living from doing it?
Oh, wow. When I started streaming, was a very different space than it is right now, and way less streamers. Also, I think I did have a perk. It was both good and bad, kind of, that I happened to be a woman, because there wasn't a lot of women on Twitch in general. In fact, when I started streaming, people were almost like, well, there was this rumors going around that it was actually my roommate, who happened to be a guy, that was the brain behind my stream, and I was like rented like a rented face or something in order to, like, you know, he was the brain behind it all. There was like conspiracy theories about this in the beginning because it was that weird, kind of. Also, I'm not a pro at all the games.
I want to come back to that whole topic of like online toxicity and what it is like for you as a woman and how that's changed over time with the audience. So let's definitely bookmark that and come back to it pretty soon. But let's talk. One thing I just wanted to.
It was not really toxicity back then. It was more like they were more stunned. They were much nicer than they are now. It was more like, wow.
Yeah, well, actually, that's sort of what I'd love to get at, is how has this changed over time? Because what you just mentioned, one thing, which is when you got started, it was not nearly as competitive as it is now. There's far, far more streamers, which I think is partly a reflection of how big the audience has grown over the last decade, but also that this is an income opportunity for a lot of people to play games and demonstrate how games are played. So let's spend time on that for a moment. How has the business of this and the whole environment for streaming changed over the course of time, and kind of put some years to it so people understand where we're coming at this from?
Oh, absolutely. So when I started, it was, I think, in the end or... Yeah, end of 2013, beginning of 2014. So it was a long time ago. Twitch had kind of not so long ago become Twitch. And it was before that, it was like Justin TV, where they tried to do this like kind of another, like they had another branding. They wanted to be streaming in general, but people didn't get the concept, I think, back then. So when they niched down and just focused on the games, that's when Twitch really started to take off. And then I came along. And I've seen there's been so many changes to the platform during the years. Even now, like, you know, things that has happened that you never thought would happen. And I mean, both good and bad. There's been a lot of different trends, obviously, in what kind of content has been streamed. Because when I started, you were only allowed to stream games and you had to have yourself in a little tiny like window. The classical, like, you know, let's play kind of, and you were not allowed to do anything else. You were not allowed to have a full screen or just have a conversation with the viewers, more like a talk show or podcast. So back then it was all games. And then I think that changed, maybe 2015 or so. I'm not really sure exactly on the, it's been so many years now, but it changed when you could actually start doing other things. And I think I was also part of that change, actually, because how I got my stream to kind of grow and what I did, because you always want to try to find something unique and something that is you, right? I've seen people grow on Twitch for all kinds of reasons, whether they are, you know, dressing out and pretending to be a character, or they're coloring their hair pink, you know, that's just fun to see, I guess. So there's been so many things that can make a stream really go big. And for me, it was actually breaking the rules of Twitch. I broke that rule where you're only allowed to play games because I started doing digital art. And I tried to kind of shape it in the beginning to... you know, I was like in a World of Warcraft category and play and tried to draw a night elf. And, you know, I tried to shape it like that. And I was kind of just hoping that they would be okay with it. I was sitting there kind of waiting like for the ban or something to show up. But it never happened. And because I broke the rules, obviously, people would love, like, they loved to tell me that it was against the rules. So I got a lot of viewers just for that. And then I think a lot of people joined that are not at all, they weren't interested in art. There wasn't a creative category, so they were not interested at all. And they joined maybe just to be kind of raging a little bit at first, but then they realized that, this is quite interesting. You know, because you see this I do very detailed cartoon-ish doodles, right? So you see this entire thing grow on the stream in front of their eyes, and they also could be part of it by coming up with ideas, and you should draw this or try to do this, even if they're not artists maybe themselves. They got to be in on the creative, like a new experience. So that is what really got me to grow. And I was worried to be banned, but then I saw that Twitch own staff was actually watching my stream. They were lurking in my stream, in the viewers.
What's going on here?
Yeah, so I was like, okay, I'm just waiting for it. But it didn't happen. And this, I saw several. So I think they started like sitting and watching my stream like while working in the day. Maybe they were in the beginning was like, okay, do we have to ban this? But then they were like, this is pretty nice. And they also stayed. And so eventually what I did is I reached out to my partner manager, since I was already a Twitch partner by then. And so we have the perk of being able to directly contact Twitch, especially when you, well, at least back then when you were so new, you got to know everyone. Like I could go out and grab a beer with the developers. It was not the biggest company. It was before Amazon also. I basically reached out and I said that I know that I've been breaking the rules. You might have noticed that he's like, yeah, I noticed. And then I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, if you want to, I can just, you know, keep playing games on Twitch. And I'll just move my art to YouTube.
That was a good way to put it.
Yeah.
You did an incredible amount of product research for them. Like, they should have been super happy and grateful. Like, the right thing to have done would have been like, hey, we've got to give her some equity in Twitch or something. Well, it was probably already owned by Amazon by then.
Probably.
You should have gotten comp for that, is what I'm saying, because you helped them figure out what the product really should become. And it's actually really interesting to look at entrepreneurship generally, and like the number of times that the new product really was about breaking the rules in some fundamental way, and hopefully in a good-natured way, which you were doing, and then building something around that. So that's really interesting, because I think people hearing this are learning about what it is to be a live streamer, but they're learning a little bit of entrepreneurship as well. What else do you want to kind of use your platform to do in the future? I know you've had a lot of ideas. Is there anything you'd like to share?
Well, I mean, in the beginning is a lot about, having fun, of course. I just started playing games. But then when you realize it can be a job, that is actually, wow, this is a business. I can do something out of this. That's when I started like experimenting, trying to think out of the box and come up with new, the creative section. Actually, they did start. So I think it was a couple of months or something after I started drawing, they actually opened up the creative category. And that was the first different category on Twitch. There wasn't games. So, I think they did that together with Adobe. I'm not sure how you say that, but and that was like a launch for that opened so many doors for so many people in all kind of creative fields, right? And I wanted to just continue on that. And I think after like all these years, because now I've been doing this for so many years, and I know this industry like my own pocket, kind of, right? So it's I realized that it's one thing that I miss on Twitch in general, that I don't see a lot, and that is education, I think. I mean, just learning things. So I haven't seen a lot of people that actually use Twitch as a platform to teach others, whether it's, it could be someone teaching someone else code, right? Like, or coding. Now I've started seeing musicians that like write their songs, and they also play their music live on stream. So that is like a little bit. So you can see it like kind of developing more and more and more, but I don't think there's even a category for it yet. So that is what I want to do, like moving forward, I think, and kind of using all this knowledge that I built in order to teach other people to do the same thing, pretty much, just you know, everything from thinking out of the box to how do you build a live stream, or, well, it's not just a live stream because it's the entire social media, it's your entire reach and everything that goes into it. Because you also see a lot of things developing that is not so positive, right? So I want to kind of work against that. And you also see a lot of rumors, a lot of, you know, people think, they see people write things in chat. They really don't know what they're talking about, for example, and they believe it. It could be either young guys or girls, you know, they see the people that, the know-it-alls, right? And they mimic. And, you know, that kind of just, that becomes like an avalanche, right? That just gets its own life and it starts trends that is not maybe the best trends, or at least not in my opinion. So I want to work against that and like be using what I've learned for good to help other people. That's what I want to do.
I think you were just returning really to this subject of online toxicity. So, I mean, let's talk about that for a bit. Like what should people know about this?
Oh, wow. Well, I think especially the last year or 1.5, 2, they're starting to like show up more things about like toxicity and the toxicity around Twitch and so on. But before that, Twitch hasn't really been in focus, or the gaming in general, I don't think has been a lot in focus. It's been YouTube, right? Like the adpocalypse on YouTube and some vlogger doing something they shouldn't. And before that, it was blogs, you know, like people writing things. And I think that it's kind of finally, in my opinion, catching up to the live streaming section. Because I don't know, it feels like gaming has kind of been under the radar. Like, and it is still to some degree, because just like it can be online everywhere, people talk about the internet like it's, you know, it is the internet and then it is IRL, like real life. Which almost say that the internet is not real, even though people spend many times, like the majority of almost their lives, their time on the internet. I think that created toxicity. And also I think that, you know, no rules, no boundaries really from both in games many times and in social medias, people just been going wild, right? Especially on Twitch. It's probably the most toxic platform. It's getting better, but it has a long way to go. Because in the beginning, you could, like, there was no rules on how to regulate your chat. So people could just write all kinds of, like, racist or, like, homophobic. I mean, people could write anything. Just, you could see these huge streamers with chat that was just falling, right? With every bad thing you can think of, pretty much. And many of them started growing because they didn't monitor it. Like they just let it be, and they were just playing games and they pretended it wasn't there, and that was kind of their way of growing. So I think for guys, the toxicity can be, and I say guys because for women it's not really the same, but for guys it's kind of been like a bro thing, like a cool thing, like, you know, not like freedom of speech and no rules, and you know, and that kind of took a life of its own, especially on Twitch. And Twitch, like I said, has gone under the radar, so people have been able to just do crazy stuff until quite recently. So yeah, that is definitely made it the worst.
I hear a lot of things in what you're saying. So one of the common mega trends that I talk about in this video series is this idea of the online world is just as real as our physical world, but not everyone has always thought of it that way. Like certainly 20 years ago, it was unusual to think of it that way. But these are real people, and the relationships you form with people, those are real, you know, these are real people's lives. So it's all based on reality. Yet people who are coming at it from games, maybe they think, as you were just saying, that because they're anonymous and it's like just a game to them, and they're sort of flexing their ability to express themselves any way they want, they can just feel that it gives them license to do whatever. How is that? You said that it's changing, though. How are you seeing it changing? Is that technology? Is that culture? Is that Twitch becoming more involved? Like, what, all of the above? I'm just curious.
Honestly, I think there's a couple of reasons. Well, first off, probably like just bots becoming better at catching it, right? So that's like just the evolution of tech and AI. Yeah, but mostly I think is that gaming has become so big in general. Like, well, we all know how huge the gaming industry has become, and other companies finally start to open their eyes for that and being like, what happened? Like, all those nerds, you know, like all those nerds that no one wants to hang out with, all of a sudden they're like the rulers of the planet, kind of, you know, like, so they're, we were like, you know, like the turtle and the hare kind of. I was definitely part of that, the nerd group, by the way, in school. And I think that has opened the eyes, and when people start to open the eyes of the revenue and the money and how big it is, it also started to be more clickbait, and media started to highlight things and, you know, things that happen in the industry in general, like what's happening with the Blizzard and Activision, and then, you know, also social medias like Twitter during the elections and things like that. That, like, it's come closer and closer to that. And Twitch, I would say, is kind of recently starting to be in the limelight, or like starting to be focused in media. Before, people didn't even know what that was. Like, even though, there was a big audience on Twitch, right? The general public, the people that were not like hardcore gamers, and they really did not get it. Like, I even had to describe what streaming was, you know, like, now people started to realize it and become interested, and that is why it's changing, I think, because people have to be held accountable for what it's doing, like the people's kids and whatnot. I think it has to come from a lot of different, like, this is like my, like, really, if I had one passion, right, it's about this. So I think it has to come from a lot of areas. It's both like media has to focus on it. People have to be aware of what's going on. I also think the parents need to be part of their kids' life, because, you know, like, I basically get the first row to seeing the difference between the kids where the parents are a big part of their online life, and the ones that don't. And it's a big difference. Like, you keep hearing about soccer moms and pageant moms and dads, but you never hear Fortnite moms, right? Or Roblox moms, even though they spend just as much time, if not more, you know, in Fortnite and Roblox.
Yeah, and I think I consider myself to be a Roblox and Minecraft dad for sure, because I have kids. I have two 10-year-olds, and they're both in those two games more than just about anything else. Well, I shouldn't call Roblox a game. It's a whole metaverse of its own, of different experiences. They're in both of those all the time. And we have dinner conversations about it. We have this ritual in my family where when we're at dinner, we go around the table and I say, like, okay, what was the best and worst thing of your day? And it's interesting because I learn a lot just even from something like that, like what kind of experiences they're having online. And I think my kids are learning about to, like, identify toxic behavior. I hope that's what they're doing, and then reject it, actually. Like, my son will say, well, the worst thing that I experienced last night actually was he ran into this toxic person who is using, like, racist language and stuff. And the server rebelled against this guy and threw him out. So I think that's good. So that's parental involvement, though. What else would you want to tell to parents?
Well, I mean, what you just said, I think, is just amazing. It doesn't have to be just, you know, playing along with your kid, but it's just like kind of being taking a part of that world, and also I think allowing it, because this is also maybe a difference between women and men, but it's also getting so much better. But, you know, boys has always been allowed to play games way more, and it hasn't been such a bad thing. But when girls did, that was like, you know, shouldn't you be like playing with dolls or go out and, you know, not sit in front of their computer? I mean, I used to wake up 5 in the morning so I could play before school, right? Before everyone else woke up. That's when I played for like 3 hours. That was my time on the in the day, right? Because I couldn't talk about it in school. And now women and girls are meet so much more allowed in the space. It still has a long way to go, but it's getting so much better. And I'm so happy to just hear girls being able to talk about it. So I think for parents to kind of highlight that, or like to tell the kids that it's okay. I mean, you can get an amazing, I keep saying to all parents that I talk to, even a taxi driver, like just the other day, that started talking about his kids and how much they play games and, you know, they should do sports instead. I basically said that, well, I told them how big the industry was, and I told them like how much these like 16, 17, 18 year old esporters actually can make, and what a huge career they can have if they're interested in that field, whether, you know, like it can be developing or like just all the metaverses that is popping up, right? So I opened his eyes.
Yeah, you just hit on a really important topic, which is I really want people to appreciate all the new kinds of jobs that are being formed in the metaverse. So during the course of this conversation so far, we've hit on a few. So you're doing one of those jobs, which is being a live streamer, which is live performance, and you're doing it both in games as well as art and creative processes and bringing your community into that. There's esports, where people actually play on professional teams and compete in tournaments and can get pretty significant payouts if they win at that. But that's another job. Like, there's so many new forms of occupation that are born around this. And I'm really intrigued in particular by this whole collision between the creator economy, people who are doing things like you are, which is art plus performance, and all the meta, so to speak, the thing that surrounds game experiences, but it's also creating something new as well. Like, and I don't think we know completely yet even what form it will take, because there may be artists like you doing volumetric live streaming in the future in 3D immersive space, and people are like there with you, and maybe people are learning how to do art and you're seeing them work on there. Like, there's so many things that we're going to be able to do with this in the future that I think is just mind-blowing. But it's new. It's not just a little bit of an extension. It's going to be a whole new set of experiences. You mentioned
exactly.
Music.
And just as real IRL, right? No, I think I'm waiting for the day. I always say that, you know, whether I'm like 30 or 80, I will always be streaming or doing whatever it is you do there. I mean, I'm really hoping that, you know, technology has gone so far that when I'm 80 or something, I can still just put on a headset or something and then like become 20 and get wings or so, and like fly around in you know, that's what I'm hoping at least. So that would be awesome. And with the jobs, yeah, the jobs that will come with that. I mean, people already build worlds, right? Online, whether it's in games, like when they mod Grand Theft Auto, right? Which is one of my main games, or Minecraft or Roblox, and just imagine what they will be able to do in the future and the jobs that they can have in like in that space in the future. So I think it's definitely something parents should just be aware of and try to, like, it's a good thing, especially I think with all the AIs and all the technology that is popping up, all the like traditional normal jobs will like just become less and less and less, and I think more and more jobs will actually be in the metaverse and in spaces like that. So and prepare kids for that, I think, but still, you know, moving around, still being healthy, it has to be balanced, right? So yeah, it's all about the balance and the conversation, talking about it. I think it's great what you said with that you're talking to your son about like what's happening in games, and that you're letting it be a real thing, because I think many parents are just like, you know, if someone would say someone said something mean to me, they would be like, what, really, who did that, you know, in school. But if it was like in a game, they would be like, oh, you mean the game,
that's just a game, kind of. That would be how people would kind of react to that in the past.
And I think there's even there's so much science now that even proves. So I read this article where they'd done a test to see what areas in the brain lights up when someone is basically saying or you're seeing something mean about you versus when you get physically hit. And the same area lit up when they just like saw it, like emotional, right? Versus the physical. And I think that, that just speaks volumes, right? How important it is to kind of just be nice to people, even online, right? And that is just as important as it is in, I hate saying real life, but I don't know, meat space, you know, like the yeah. We need a better word for
meat space is an okay word. It's a little bit neuromancer, William Gibson-ish. I think of it as physical space versus virtual space. I don't like using the idea of real because I think online, which is all premised on our relationships and our self-expression in this space is what makes it real. I have a feeling that, you know, millennial and Gen Z parents are probably already approaching this a little bit differently than say, like, so I'm Gen X and I was pretty weird. You know, you mentioned nerds ahead of time. I was like ultra nerd because I, you know, grew up as a teenager playing Dungeons and Dragons and computer programming when both of those on their own were super nerdy. But then I met my future wife in an online game and we started a game studio. So we are like kind of ahead of the curve in terms of the nerdiness and like the online world and the online world turning into real relationships. But I recognize that I was very rare for that for my particular generation. But, you know, Gen Z and in particular has actually grown up with all of this. You would think that the way they're experiencing it and the way they're going to, I mean, most of them haven't had children yet, but as they have children, they're going to really approach this differently because they saw this toxicity that you referred to and hopefully didn't like it, don't want their own kids to experience that.
That's, I mean, I don't have kids, even though I work a lot with kids and I work with kids even before streaming, but I don't have my own, but I'm the same, you know. I think it was 1999 and I'm born 86. So 1999 in Sweden, that's when I got 100 downloads. So we were a bit before, like it was very, very fast, obviously. And I was, I think, among the first people in Sweden. I was just lucky with where I lived. So I got out on the internet very early, or like more like the internet as it is today, I guess. I know exactly how toxic it is, and growing up with that, I'm like, that's probably why it's such a big subject for me, because like I would never want my kids to, like, now when you realize, when you can see it with like mature eyes, right? Like, you're like, uh-oh, no. I always kind of joke and say that I'm very happy that I was not like, that streaming, live streaming and things like that did not exist when I was like 13 or 14, because I would probably do a lot of stupid things, especially back then, because, you know, back then parents did not, they didn't even know, like my mom was learning Word, right? But there wasn't live streaming, there wasn't like that. I couldn't even send the bad photos to people, thank God. I could only be in a chat, like text chat, and be like, hot girl 14 or something. But so now it's a totally different animal, right? And that's why also people have to be more aware, but also so much more opportunities. Like, there are so many good things that comes with it. So at the same time, I keep telling people, don't try to like go back in time, because it's not going to work. Like, trying to work kind of against technology to be like, we're going to become farmers again, we're not going to have internet. I mean, it's not, I don't think that's the solution. The solution is just to keep innovating and making what we have now better and more secure. And also just teaching people that, you know, the more people realize that the internet is real, or, you know, they just stop thinking about it, then I think that will change. And it's already, like you said, changing. I was like, I got like front row for all of those people that I like to call them, like they had the iPad nannies, right? When parents use the iPad instead of actually maybe parenting as much, because it's nice, but they had no idea what the kids were actually doing on the iPad. Right. I got to see that, so
yeah,
I'm happy to see it changing.
I think that's basic media literacy, right? So
yeah.
People need to become literate in games and metaverse and Twitch streaming and esports if that's what their kids are interested in. Because on the one hand, my personal feeling is trying to shut that all off probably doesn't work. Like, kids know how to kind of tap into it through some other means anyway. So given that your kids are most likely going to get involved in some of these things if they want to, if they're interested in it, it's really important for parents to become literate around it.
Yeah.
And spend time with your kids and see what they do and get a feel for the experience and talk to them about it. I think the talking part is really important, and ask them what kind of experiences they're having there and what kind of things they're doing, because it can be enormously creative. It can be expressive. It's a way to socially connect with people in a positive way, right? It doesn't have to be the toxic aspects that we were just talking a lot about. Like, there's also real human connection being formed through all of these things. And that, I think, needs to be celebrated. Just understand what the whole spectrum of experience can look like, and be talking to your kids and also educating your kids about, you know, how to confront some of that in the online worlds.
Yeah, exactly. And talking and not, I would say talking and not blaming, because I think it's easy also for parents, maybe if they get scared or something, you know, to be angry at their kids, right? Like, why did you write back to that person? You know, things like that. And I think just also, especially with games and the internet, be open-minded. Like, if they're doing something maybe that they shouldn't, I mean, of course you should, but I think don't make kids afraid of it so that they don't want to tell you anything. That is the key, right? Because it was like that when I was a kid. But like I said, I didn't have the same tools that they have nowadays. But I didn't have that, that I couldn't feel that I could talk to my parents about things like that, because it was, you know, they would be angry, and I didn't want them to be angry at me. So it was more like trying to hide it than actually.
Right.
And I think just trying to get around that and be, that's what people should be aware and be part of their kids. I'll try to play Fortnite, even if you're really bad at it. I'm really bad at it. Like, wow.
It's
but
fun. Run around, build a building. There's something you can do in Fortnite. Maybe you'll be the first person down, but enjoy it. And enjoy, just find out what your kids are interested in. Like, my kids ended up trying Fortnite, not really getting into it. They were much more interested in games where they could be a little more creative. And then my kids are also into like more retro styled games like Undertale and Terraria and things like that. So, you know, kids may surprise you in terms of what they're going to do. It may not all be Call of Duty or Fortnite, you know, running around killing each other.
And also be aware that there's so many good things coming out of it, like, you know, leadership skills, learning how to work in a group, and you know, just taking initiatives and the like you said, the creative aspect of it. I mean, there's just so many great things that comes out of it. If you look at research, I mean, most of it is, it's like the majority is like positive, just of all everything that comes out. They're not so positive is, I think, the social media aspect and the how people treat each other. So that is what we have to really work on. And also, can I think, since we are, well, you're talking to developers and others here, I think a big portion of that, an important part, is to have rules and like boundaries and stuff in games, right? Because it all starts somewhere, and it starts what they are many times allowed to do in a game. And there's, I mean, I've seen, even on Twitch, being a streamer for all these years, I've seen so many changes in gaming in general, like how people could do anything, like everything was allowed in the beginning. And I, especially as a like streamer that have a lot of, you know, you get stalkers, you get people trying to stream snipe you and destroy every game you play. And I just, I couldn't do anything because, for example, playing World of Warcraft when they released the Classic, I couldn't. It took me 4 hours to walk the same distance that would it would usually take 10 minutes. It took me 4 hours because I had so many people killing me over and over and over again because they could see what I was doing on the stream, right? But we're talking like extreme things. I mean, not just like some hiking and killing, but like we were extreme. They made guilds that was all like they were named like Kill Sweepless. And this was like just, I don't know, when was Classic released? That was not even a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And nothing was done to this. I spoke to Blizzard. I was like, is there something you can do? And they were like, we'll look into it. Nothing has ever happened. So I think, you know, just kind of putting your foot down and some things shouldn't be, I mean, it shouldn't be too strict, but it shouldn't be not crazy things like that. Like having entire groups with hundreds of people, like being all attacking someone, that should not be allowed.
Yeah, I mean, I think the message that I'm hearing is if you're a game developer with a live game, and pretty much all games are going to be live games from now on, even single player games become live games because they have a whole community around the game that's relevant there. And you have to be intentional about what you want that community to be. If you want it to be the wild, wild west, do nothing, and then you'll replicate exactly what you just described. If you want a different kind of community that has greater empathy, that's open and welcoming to all kinds of people of different backgrounds and life experiences and stories and whatnot, then you have to be intentional about it, and it takes work.
I know I've been talking with you before about like bots and what you can do, so I know it's also like the technical aspect of trying to develop that because it's just so much of it. I mean, there's games, Counter-Strike, when I play Counter-Strike, I mean, there's not a game that I can join without having people being like extremely toxic because it's allowed. And I think as a streamer in general, whether you're male or female, or just online, is like, if you choose to be a streamer, then you're choosing to get hate. That's how people see it. So it's like, but you know, if you don't want hate, you shouldn't be a streamer. It's basically part of our job description. And that is one of those things I try to work against. And even to kids, you know, I see this even small kids on like TikTok and so on, they get really mean comments, right? From randoms, and they don't remove them. They let them just stay there on YouTube or in TikTok because it's like this kind of unwritten rule that you're not supposed to like remove the really bad stuff. And I try to tell people that, you know what, your social media, that is your space. It's like your living room your little living room in that app or whatever. So you decide what should be allowed there or not. And you would never allow someone to stand in your living room and tell you things like that. You would throw them out, right? So I try to tell people to do that, even in social media. So I think it's just something that is kind of rooted in many, and is probably rooted in this whole like freedom of speech thing, which obviously is a great thing. It's really good and very important to have freedom of speech. But I think freedom of speech should not be freedom of consequence, right?
And not freedom to enter anyone's living room and expect that you can say whatever you want and not be asked to leave.
Exactly. I mean, that's just common sense, I think.
Exactly. People are treated as objects in the online world. That hasn't fully caught up yet. We've talked a lot about this idea of virtual mainstreaming, meaning the virtual world, the metaverse, it's real, but there's a lot of people who approach it thinking, well, these are just people. Like, they approach a person like you as, hey, she is a live streamer and she can be an object of whatever kind of toxic nonsense I want to send your way, because as you put it, that's your job. You're supposed to put up with that, which is completely terrible. Like, you'd never treat a person like that in real life unless you're like a psychopath.
No, exactly. I mean, probably some of them are psychopaths, but far from everyone. I think it's just people have this idea that yeah, you're like they I don't think people understand exactly what it is to be like on the receiving end of that, when especially not when there's hundreds of thousands literally that do it, even though it is like you know, anonymous people most of the time. But I think, and that is also something that goes into streaming. I think right now, like if you want to be a streamer, that is one aspect that is, it's just, you can't get away from it. So like, I see a lot of people stop streaming just because of that. They can't take it, especially women, mostly women, but, you know, they can't take it, because it's just, it becomes too much in the end. But again, I'm hoping, like, that's what I'm fighting for. I want that to be better, because streaming can be an amazing thing. And I think nowadays streaming is very important also for the gaming industry, because I know so many people that goes to Twitch to like try to, you know, see a game before they decide if they're going to buy it or not, whether it's Twitch or YouTube. Mm-hmm. But Twitch is a little bit, it's more personal, right? Because they can ask me questions. They can't ask a YouTuber questions. So but if they wonder something that I'm not telling them, they can just be writing it and be like, so what do you think about this? Or can you try this? Or do they have this setting? And then I'd be like, oh, let's check it out. And then I can do that. So you get like this totally different, very personal connection with a streamer in a way that you don't really get with YouTubers in the same. Yes. YouTubers is more like when you watch something on TV. So. And that is also why I want more people to start streaming and realizing it. Companies, after COVID especially, started to realize, because Twitch have been growing a lot, of course, because so many people was home and so many people lost their jobs and they tried to like get a career as a streamer instead. And so I think more people to Twitch and more eyes on Twitch, like the more companies, and so on, the better I think the community will be too. Because just same as with games, right? People have to be held accountable. And that goes for the social medias too. They can't be like, well, we haven't done anything. What was like your platform? You can decide if you're gonna have them in your living room or not, right? And what rules you're gonna have there. So that goes for all companies. And when it goes to Twitch, especially gaming companies, right? Because if it weren't for all the amazing games, Twitch wouldn't be a thing either. So they are definitely depending on all of you guys.
And businesses generally, game companies specifically, really are trying to figure out ways that they can tap into these authentic connections that you have formed with your community, because your community trusts you. It's what they call influencers. And I'm just curious, like, what have your experiences been like working with game companies? What should game companies know about working with someone like you?
Before Clubhouse, I didn't actually know that many developers, because as a streamer, you kind of have this a big wall behind you, or like between you and the developers, which I could never really get past. And that is the agencies, right? So they're doing a great job too, because that's also how you find jobs, and they're making all of our jobs easier. But personally, I just love having direct contact with the company and the developers that makes it. Like one of those examples that one of the companies that's done that is EA, that did the Game Changer program. So through the Game Changer program, I could be like a Apex Game Changer, and I got to fly to Los Angeles and actually meet the developers, like hang out. And since I'm extremely interested in design, and I didn't, like at that time, I didn't have the chance to meet a lot of people in the industry. That was so exciting to just, like, I was probably the nerdiest. I zoomed in on a roof, like, and I was like, how did you do that texture? So I got so many questions because it was so much fun. So personally, even though I know it takes time, but try to also have form like personal relationships with streamers, not just having like this, the agencies in between.
Right.
The agencies
can be
good too.
It seems like it should be obvious business sense, because if you're, it's not like you're an advertising venue and they're just placing ad units. You have the connection with your community where they're looking for your knowledge and understanding and that interpretation really of what the game designers had in mind with the game, what's special about it. And you can be more like an ambassador than, you know, just someone who's talking up a game to get views or something.
Exactly. I mean, and you see that a lot. You see these platforms showing up, right, that have hundreds and thousands of different streamers, and then they just send it out to everyone. Like, I can just click a button and be like, accept to get a sponsorship or something. And then I'm supposed to play this game a certain day and for this many hours. And absolutely, that can be good for some aspects. I mean, if you want to reach like a big mass of like very small streamers in order to like kind of be raised up on the in the browsing on Twitch and so on. But I think it's more crucial to kind of just create those close relationships too, because that's like, from my perspective, that's just it becomes a totally different thing when you talk to or about a company where you actually maybe met the people or like, you've been speaking to them and you're like getting to know them, and it becomes such a, like, the viewers can feel it, right? So they feel that it's like an authentic thing. It's not just, this is blah, 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 you know, like, it's very salesy, and it doesn't become salesy because, like, you're not just talking about this thing to get that gives you money. Yeah, it's like people behind it. Mm-hmm. And also show, I think, We want to see the developers, like, not just like everyone. I'm talking about everyone. We want to, like, I don't know, make TikToks, get a TikTok account and do goofy dances. Like, some developer that would never dance in his life, get him to like try to do it. Like, people will just eat that up. They would love it, right? So it's, I think it's also the company itself kind of just becoming like real people instead of just the like just yay or something that can like have a bad taste in some people's mouth. But it's like, if you're not just a company, if you're actually, hey, this is this person, that's awesome. And I've noticed that when I work with so many brands, and one of my main companies that I work with right now is LG, which is also like this huge company, right? Everyone knows what LG is. Everyone has like either a TV or something, but they don't know anything who is the people behind that, right? When I did that, like, it was actually a guy from LG that he was total nerd just like me. So when we were putting this campaign together, we actually started talking games, I think, for like 3 hours when we were supposed to have a meeting for like 45 minutes, but we really hit it off. And then he came over and like I was live streaming when they came and put up the TV, and he was like talking, and my viewers were like, wow, you know, like they were like, it became a totally different thing because like, wow, this is a person and he's so cool, and wow, he's really good at English, and he had like you know, it kind of like, yeah, he had like long hair and a like ponytail, and then he has like little earrings with like skulls in them and stuff, and it's like, wow, this is so cool. You know, they connected the company, and they could see like a gamer, right? Like, they didn't want to see this like a supermodel, perfect, or guy in a suit or whatever. They wanted to see someone they could relate to. Mm. And then that is something I recommend all developers to do.
Get a Discord. It becomes so depersonalized. And it's important for people to remember that there's people working there. They care about what they're doing. You know, they're engineers, they're developers. They are people that can form connections with the community as well. That's tremendous advice. Yeah. Emma, we're coming up to the end of our time, but I want to thank you for being part of this, because this was just so packed with information about culture, both the positives and the negatives, the life of a live streamer, how you've been able to build a career around this. You know, to kind of maybe wrap things up though, there's a lot of people that are going to watch this where they're thinking about becoming a live streamer, or parents are watching it and their kids have said, hey, I want a Twitch streamer. I want to be a YouTuber. You've shared some advice already about, like, just pay attention, be sensitive to the communities, and become literate in their media consumption. But for that person who wants to make a career at this, what advice, what guidance would you offer someone?
Oh, I would say, well, to become a streamer today, because it's just such a huge market and so many people are trying, I think people should put more focus on trying to come up with content instead of actually just putting all their time into buying the most expensive gear and setting up like fancy overlays and the emotes. And like, you see so many people that have all that, but they have like no viewers, right? So they're sitting there and that is a little bit depressing. So I think just work on, like, if they put that same time that they put into doing all that into just trying to figure out, like, what is it that I can kind of bring to the table? What is it I can do that to kind of put a personal spin on it? Kind of like when I broke the rules by doing art. I mean, it can be a certain theme, or just, hey, if you like a role play, do an act, or, I mean, it can be anything. I think put the time on that, because it doesn't matter. Like, you can have the most amazing overlay and tech and cameras and all that, and that's not going to give you any viewers. But if you have amazing content, you can have a really shitty webcam, probably even shitty sound, and people are going to be like, they're still going to be watching, because it's like, wow, you know, like, what? Either that is so weird, what the heck is that person doing? Or it's like, wow, this person is so good at it, or is doing things in a way I haven't thought about, or is teaching, like I said, like things that they want to learn. They're giving value, right? So that is like number one. And also, I mean, you should have good enough internet, of course, because you're going to upload. So it's the upload that's important. And put more focus on the lighting than the camera, because you can have you can make a kind of a very cheap webcam look like like a $1 million if you have great lighting. So the lighting is so much more important. If you have an amazing camera but like really bad lighting, is not going to help anyway. So
I invested in a couple of flood lamps in here. It's like $100. It's the cheapest thing you can invest in if you want to not look terrible on the camera when you're doing any video.
This has been so good.
This has been so awesome, Emma. That's a great punchline on this. So you heard it here, everybody. This is a creator economy, right? Like, that's what's exciting about the metaverse, is this whole confluence of creativity from games, from performance, from making art. It's a whole new range of experiences that people are having here. And it's something new, but it's about creativity. And I'm excited about all the jobs being created, the opportunities, the businesses, and also just the unknown world that we're going into here, where we're going to discover all kinds of new things together. So, by the way, we'll put down in the show notes a link to Emma's Twitch stream. Go check it out and get a sense of the art, the game playing, all the stuff that Emma's doing there. And subscribe down below to the video here in this channel, because I have a lot of fun talking to people like Emma, who are bringing all these different perspectives in the business, culture, and technology of the metaverse. So, Emma, thank you so much for being part of this today.
Thank you so much for letting me be here. It was really fun. I could stay for hours, so thank you so much. Also, if anyone is interested to learn more about this, they can reach out to me, because I also do consulting in this for like small companies and so on. But yeah. Super fun to be here. Thank you so much, John.
Excellent. Thank you, Emma.